Well, welcome to Talking Comics. This week we have Ray Jamison with us. Tell us about yourself.
Well, as you've already introduced, my name is Ray Jamison. I've been a fan of comic books in particular, superheroes as well, since before I could remember, thanks to a brother who is almost 5 years older than me. So I was born in the Orwellian year of 1984. Because of a very interesting time, and I've said this on other podcasts, toy companies, comic books, and cartoon networks combined forces and made this unholy trinity alliance to bleed every parent's wallets. If you like this cartoon, you'll love this comic. If you love this comic, you're going to love this toy line. And guess what? We just made a toy line. We're going to base it off this cartoon, and there's going to be a comic about it after. And the vicious cycle, and I was enthralled right in the middle of that fray, and my brother as well. So we're right there for He-Man, G.I. Joe, Thundercats, Silverhawks. I loved Brave Star myself. And then because I am just inside millennial, not quite Gen X, unlike my brother, I was more into like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and later on into the 90s with the Nickelodeon era. I'm just before Nickelodeon. But one really cool thing in the 90s is I really got to see a lot of cool things where comic books went from in the 80s, there was, yeah, sure, there was Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And there was my brother loved The Incredible Hulk, despite it being only one season. I didn't get to see it till later, but I saw the X-Men pilot where Wolverine has an Australian accent. You know the one I'm talking about? I really loved that era, but the 90s did a very interesting thing. I have a love-hate relationship with comic books in the 90s, but one thing that they nailed hook, line, and sinker was their cartoons, which breathed a lot of life within the youth and their product. I wasn't too much a fan of Spider-Man, the animated series, but it was a very successful thing, what it did. But let's not forget Batman, the animated series. And I'm sure between you and I, we could probably list off another 12. But the cool, one of the really cool things about that era is that was the setup for movies. Nowadays, especially with Disney, they'll test the waters with like an animated movie or something to that effect, see the reception, and then consider a live movie. I don't know if you remember, like 2006, they had Ultimate Avengers, the animated movie, and they did a sequel of it based off of the Ultimate Avengers line, or the Ultimates, I should say. But shortly after that, Marvel started picking up its socks and making movies how they should have been. But before that point, it was a golden nugget to see Blade in 98. And despite everything going on, you got to see X-Men in 2000. And then, of course, to cap off the big three of that turn of the century point, Sam Raimi's Spider-Man with Tobey Maguire and Kristen Dunst and William Dafoe. Those three movies made a statement and opened up this entire opportunity for the comic industry. Suddenly, people that would kind of roll their eyes, like when I was in elementary school, a lot of people pretended not to like comic books. It was like almost a litmus test to see if you were cool or not. And I was like, I like comics, but people were like, you like comics, right? But at the turn of the century and later on, suddenly it's enjoyable. You meet somebody, if I look at all the things hanging on your back wall 20, 30 years ago, well, you were called a nerd, but it was an insult, not a compliment. Now right. You're a nerd, but wow, you're a nerd. This is awesome.
Now it's acceptable. I'm an acceptable person in humanity now versus 20 years ago. Nobody liked me.
when Spider-Man for 2002 came out, that was my last year of high school. And one thing I heavily appreciated about that one in particular, if you really consider that era, going back to the remark I made about turn of the century, when you think of Blade, The Matrix, Underworld, and even Daredevil, everything's leather, sunglasses, more bullets than you can count, snowflakes in a Christmas special. And Spider-Man just decided, you know what? We're not going to do that. We're going to tell an age-old thing of repercussions to your actions, responsibility, and so forth. It has been done in one form or another in other case scenarios. I think the last time it was done very well was 2011 with First Avenger, Captain America, because suddenly It didn't matter what he looked like, it mattered what he did. And that's what I liked about Spider-Man in 2002. And I really like that style of storytelling where it doesn't matter if the person's cool or not, but if they do something where other people want to do the good thing too, for me, that's a real Ray Jameson type of story. I appreciate that kind of thing. That's a little bit about me. Yeah, I said a lot there.
A little bit, but no, but it's all come full circle because now when we were kids, they bled our parents' wallets dry. Now we're in our 40s and it's bleeding our wallets dry.
Yeah, the curse is finally complete. Yes.
Right.
Yes, that's right.
What are they going to do in 20 years with our kids? I don't know, but we'll see. We'll figure it out.
Well, we'll be in retirement homes and then we will be bleeding their wallets dry.
Correct. There you go. Perfect. I like that idea. I need my kids to get better jobs. Hopefully my daughter, my oldest daughter, will get a good job and my youngest one will continue this podcast comic writing career. So hopefully she'll pick that up.
Right on, man.
We'll see. But what got you into writing comics yourself?
Well, where do I begin? This comic is, it's an homage to camaraderie. If you, and I've said this many times in the past, if you ever had a circle of friends, you get old enough, even if it's one friend or more, but you hit a certain age, you just don't get to see them as much as you'd want. And usually that, I mean, there's a whole list of reasons, be it school, work, maybe you have kids now. For me, I moved across country and I couldn't see my friends and family as much as I wanted to. This story actually started because I wanted to find a means to hang out with my friends. So we decided to play Dungeons and Dragons together via webcam. And this story is
the cursed D&D from the 80s.
Yep.
No, I love D&D. 70s. I play all the time.
I love playing D&D, but
I do too. I love it.
I never played it before at that point, and I offered to my friends, and I became the dungeon master. And if that wasn't challenging enough, I made my own homebrew. I didn't even use modules or anything like that.
You went deep.
I didn't bite off more than I chew, but let's just say I definitely chewed a lot. And when it was done, I had some really cool stories that I heavily appreciated, and I wanted to just express them. So this comic, this miniseries, it's 3 issues long. It takes place over one night. It is dedicated to that level of camaraderie. And if you were a fly on the wall with a random group of friends that you've never met before, you would see how they interact, how they get along, how they rub each other the wrong way sometimes. Maybe you'd hear the occasional inside joke that you wouldn't quite get, but you could feel how well they get along. And this book, as I've already told you in my background story, I love comic books. I wanted to express that. So I took this homebrew story and I took out the players that my friends were playing as, and I injected my own characters in it. And I based it off of people I know and various other influential elements. But at the end of the day, this story was actually rough drafted 15 years prior before I actually got to write the script, and came together very nice. I was very happy with how this all came together.
Awesome. So it's not the characters that are in this story are not the actual characters at your table.
Correct. That's okay. Correct.
See, I would cheat and use their stories. I was just sitting there thinking, like, I could write comics based off my D&D games. No. My friend who's DMs for us, he could write amazing stories, but he wouldn't sit down and do it, I don't think. But we'll see. I'll talk to him about it. So that's awesome. So you decided to turn it, you wrote it and you wanted to turn it into a comic book, but you didn't do the artwork yourself, did you?
I did not. So
how did you find your artist?
Well, it's a really interesting thing. I've gotten some arguably like great names. Some people say all or used to be big or is big now. I just consider them for what they have done. I just asked people. That's all I did. I just said, hey, would you be interested in taking a chance on me? Some names of notice, Harv Salteras, who did the Dan Ketch era of Ghost Rider the first year of that run. He did all the interiors and the covers. He's done two covers for me on issue one and issue three, which is, and even more impressive is not only did I get him to draw a cover, but the colorist for those covers is Dan Kemp, who's done roughly basically Spawn 50 to 150 in regards to coloring. So a man who's colored Todd McFarlane, Capullo, John Romita's era of The Amazing Spider-Man, John Romita Jr., of course. My current interior artist for issue two and upcoming number three, Victor Medina. Just flattered by the amount of talent that just took a chance on me. Because in the realm of the comic industry, I'm not a big name. Like, who am I? I here's a story. And for these people to just be like, yeah, sure, I've got the time. I think I could fit you in. Oh my goodness. Having this talent that has made canon events and like cool, critical, like TSN turning points within comics in issues. For them to do something for me, that's the equivalent of having like Elvis Presley or Kurt Cobain perform a song that I've written. It just, wow.
Right.
Cool.
That's awesome. That's really cool. So how did you meet those connections? Like, did you just
strictly
DM them? Or?
Yeah, just strictly social media. And
see,
half
kids,
the time.
It just takes asking the question.
And I got to disclaim, I got a lot of no. I got a lot of NO, and that's perfectly fine. But if you got a 3% chance of someone saying yes, it just means you have to ask 100 times. And that's okay. Get 97 no's, you'll find somebody.
That's right. I have this thing where it's 3% of 3%. Like 3% are going to look at something and 3% of those people are going to buy it. So you actually need like, you know, whatever. The
thousands. Yes.
Thousands.
But yes.
That was something I came up with. I'm sure I didn't invent that theory. It was just something I learned 20 years ago when I was running a business.
Makes sense.
I used to run a game store. Held weekly D&D and Pathfinder and card games and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
15 years ago. It's been a while, but here we are. Now we just do the podcast, and now I'm a writer, which is very weird to say. But did you do much writing before this? Well, I mean, you wrote the homebrew. Like, that takes a lot of writing.
Yes, it did. In regards to, see, this is one of the best things about comic books. It's show and tell. So there's certain times you just want to see something or want the reader to see something. And as they say, a picture's worth 1,000 words. So you can get 1,000 words with just a pose or a transition between panels, and that I always heavily appreciated. One of the cool things is being a dungeon master in D&D is you describe the thing that's happening. So I'll give you a great example. So since you play a D&D, I'm sure you're familiar with crit 20s and crit 1s. Okay, so I had a game I was running. Only two people were free for the meeting. One's a rogue, one is a fighter-barbarian combo. And they are at a castle speaking to a king over a dynamic. And the king says, well, we have this issue of orcs coming towards our castle currently. They're marching. We're like 3 days out. And they want to like, they've been traveling for like ever. We don't know what they want. They seem out of character. Their banner, their everything on them, the markings do not look familiar. And so these two decide, well, let's go and scout out and see what happens. So they prep him and Ha. There's like 12 hours left. They decide, you know what? We want to meet them halfway. So we want to keep traveling till they're halfway away. And then we're going to make a plan from there. Sure. So they walk away from the castle. They get to the halfway point, and then the fighter barbarian says, you know what, I want to start sharpening poles, and I want to drive them into the ground and angle them towards the oncoming orcs. That way I've got something to work with. This will let us know exactly how sentient they are, or if they're mindless, or whatever the case is. That's a great idea. The rogue's like, well, I'm going to go even closer, and I want to spy on them, see if I can get any critical details. So the rogue gets within, 200 feet of them, and he says, okay, I'm going to bust out my telescope. Okay, perception check. He rolls a natural one. I see you see a large man sitting on a rock sharpening poles. He's looking the wrong way, right? but with comic books, a panel, you don't have to describe it. You could just show the barbarian sharpening a pole, like natural one,
That's fantastic. Sorry, this cold.
All good.
So you got your artists, you got your colors and your letterers and all that. How long did it take to do that first book?
I couldn't give you the time, but from writing it to the first Kickstarter, the first issue was approximately 18 months. Okay. I have a day job, and I took my time with it. Sometimes people, they fall victim to what was a problem in the 90s, where everything was who is, quote-unquote, the best artist. And I don't think every story needs the best artist. I don't think every story would do better with, quote-unquote, the best artist. The artist that fits your story is going to be different for every story. Every time I picked one of these individuals, I was thinking, I like their style. Is it too gritty, not gritty enough? Sometimes just body language and anatomy, little things like that. And when I felt I had the right team together, we executed. We went, it's go time.
Go time. That was a lot of fun. I'm sure it had to be for you too, but when you finally get an artist and you give them the script and then you start getting those first pages in, and just how amazing that is when you just open it up and see something that came from my head onto, writing in a notebook is now like artwork in my hand. Like, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
Can you terrific. Go into that?
Yes. And, one thing I really like, I got a compliment from Victor Medina. Shout out to Victor Medina, who's doing all my interiors. He also is doing the main protagonist cover for issue 3. He really liked my descriptions of panels. He felt it was very easy to work with. So something I try really hard to do, I have a manufacturing background. That we use the 4 C's, which is clear, complete, concise, and correct. And if I'm not knocking those 4 C's off, there should be things left up to interpretation, flair for the artist to express with. But if I'm not hitting those 4 C's, I might be giving room for interpretation, which I do not want. And so I try to be very clear with as few words as possible, which is a tough balance. But according to Victor, I'm doing a half decent job with it.
That's awesome. I love the fact that you can do that. Like, you're talking about in the script, like giving it to him to then draw.
Yes.
That part of the
yes.
direction. That was my favorite part, is just giving very little direction. Because I'm working up with a guy now who's doing the next cover, or he's going to work on my next book.
Yes.
But they're going to do a cover for this book, the first book, right?
Like a
variant cover. Thought it'd be cool they do a variant cover for this one, then they'll be the full artist for the next one.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love that, not giving them any direction on the cover. I just gave them the book and said, all right, figure out what you want to do and make a cool cover, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And like, they sent me the sketch up today, and it's like perfect, because it's like we have 6 covers, and one's a sketch cover, so really 5 covers.
Mm-hmm.
But they're all different, and they're all a cool part of the story, right? So it's really cool to
It's funny you mention that, because all of my covers, like, it's a very common thing to have a additional covers, variant covers. Mm-hmm. Any covers I've done, I only felt it was acceptable if it had something to do with the story inside. And I've got some really, like, I can't even talk about them yet. Like, I can share some images right now if you're up for it.
Sure.
Well, I'll do two. Okay, first one, let me share this here. Share.
Does it let you share? You should have.
I think I got it here. Yes. Okay. Things are to share. Here's the first one. So
look at this.
So this is the first time that I put. You were talking about script going to panel, and this is an example of this blue skinned elf named Chazgo. He has a pet. It's a 3-eyed albino crow named Emex. And he can see through its eyes. So before the four main characters are about to sneak into a bandit's little hideout or compound, he gets surveillance of the area, gets a layout of the land, if you will. And this is just an example. I said I wanted to show Chazgo in the middle, then the panels around it describing these things. And the combination of how he laid it out. But not just that, the colorist, he even made it look like you could tell you're seeing through a lens. It almost looks like it's glass. I just really, really appreciated that for what it is. He did a really good job there.
Yeah, that's really good.
I'm very happy with that. That's one of the shining, like, crown jewels of all the pages so far. That one's in the top five easily.
And this is the part of book three, or?
That's part of issue number two. Issue two. One and two, okay, will be available for the Kickstarter. I am going to find the other one here. Give me 30 seconds. I've got it right here. Ha, found it. Okay, so let's do this. All right, close. There's so many buttons.
Yeah, right.
I need to speak with a shaky voice as I look through all these buttons. All right. Sharing screen. Window. You. There we go. Okay.
I'm glad that works. You're the first person that's shared or been able, like, to do that, to try that.
So this here is the main protagonist cover. So Victor Medina, as I was mentioning, he actually did this as a warm-up before he started the interiors for issue two. And he posted online, I'm like, with some color corrections, I want to pay you to use this. He says, yeah, sure. So I decided to make it the main cover. It's a great little piece. I'm very happy with it. Of course, if there's a protagonist cover, there has to be as well an antagonist cover, which you can see here. If I can come back to you, there you are. This is the one I mentioned is drawn by Harv Salteras, who's drawn a lot of Ghost Rider. You can kind of see that in the skulls of the thralls.
Now that you say it, yeah, for sure.
Colored by Dan Kemp, as are the interiors of my book. This is the first reveal of the main villain. The main villain not mentioned in any form in the first two issues. As I was saying, this three-issue miniseries takes place all over one night. And the first two issues is them just trying to figure out what's going on. Is this fictional drug that's going through their town in Ivywood, does it have something to do with an undead outbreak that happened? That's where the premise starts. And then eventually there's, let's just say they have to do a lot of chewing as well. these guys are not the most powerful individuals in the realm. So there's actually gravity at stake. See, everybody loves champions. Superman is a great example of that. Infallible, uncorruptible, pretty much invincible. Sought as is pretty much immortal, like the shining example of truth. And although everybody looks up to these type of examples and are inspired by these type of examples, very few can actually relate to those type of examples. So I didn't even try to match anything like that. I made people that, like in the first issue, three of the four main protagonists, they almost get killed during this undead outbreak, which they help stave off with the guards. I wanted it to feel like their decisions have some weight. By this third issue, these guys are tired. It's getting near the end of the night. They've exerted and exhausted themselves in a couple of ways, and now they don't realize they're about to get themselves in a whole lot of more trouble. So it's all
about...
Do
they have spell slots left?
Well, they got cantrips, but maybe okay, a spell slot works. Or two, maybe. maybe some daily feature or something like that. Yeah.
Do they get a short rest between issue 2 and 3?
No, they do not.
They're
behind the eight ball. They are in going into issue 3. These fellas are the closest to fix a problem, but they are not the ideal. So the real question is, going back to the camaraderie dynamic, if you're surrounded by the most intimate and closest of friends you know, and you can either survive or do the right thing and maybe survive, with your friends around, you're probably going to pick doing the right thing. And this is just that type of scenario. The stakes are high, the people are tired, and everything is a very serious tone. Because of the first two issues and the setup, I can justify all of the action that's about to come into issue number 3. Victor, my interior artist, mentioned he loves the way I've written out the entire script of all 3. He says, you have a lot of young and upcoming writers. And he says, everything is action, 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 which is understandable because you need eye candy and you want to sell the comic. But at the same time, people can get numb to that stuff. So when you do see the action happen, it happens in the first issue, it happens in the second, but it has a balance. There's justification for these things happening. The second issue, there's a lot of sneaking around, and there's a lot of tension because of that. And that is another way where people are, you can almost see the tension or feel it or smell it, if you will, with your senses. The last cover I could show right now is specifically of Chasgo. This was drawn by, not that one. There we go. This was done by, his alias is Pogs Art, and it was colored by Dave Kemp, Dan Kemp's brother. This is going to be glow in the dark. Everything that's white there is going to be glow in the dark. I'm really excited.
That's cool.
I think that one's really going to pop.
That'll be really cool.
Yeah, I've got other covers. As I've done with issue 1 and 2, there are individual covers of each character, like the variants. And this is the first one I'm showing off. If anybody looks up Jay Sloan right now, you can see he's currently inking one of Sarlacc, the full-blooded dwarf, which is looking really good. But it's torture not talking about. I have 5 more covers to show off, and I can't even, I'm looking at one right now, and I can't even show it to you yet. Fishley, he's doing one for me, which is going to be a lava foil, which is going to look real sharp, but that's all I can say about that.
Right. That's pretty cool.
Last thing I'll show on here, since I already have it up, to be real quick, as I was showing there in black and white, this is the first page of the third issue, and this leaves off right where they left off in issue 2. After unforeseeably running into some captured civilians at a bandit's compound and freeing them, they come across a book, and the last pages of issue 2 are, things have escalated, and what do we do here? Earlier in issue 2, they've already discussed, when do we admit we're out of our league with this kind of stuff? When should we just report this to the guards? And with the revelation of what's on this book, it escalates to, it doesn't matter if this is out of our league. We don't have that option anymore. And I can't really say anything else about that. But you could tell it's going to get a little
intense. You made me excited.
Right on, man.
Read it.
Right on. Thanks.
I read a little bit of the first one. I didn't get to the second one yet.
Mm-hmm.
But you gave it to me, so I definitely will read it.
Right on.
But I was checking out the Kickstarter. When do you plan on launching the Kickstarter?
April. So it's coming quick.
Okay.
We're in February now. It's 8 weeks. I mean, 8 weeks ago was Christmas, right? Like, it just goes by quick.
Not even. Yeah. It was, I'm going to launch mine probably mid-March.
Awesome.
So, but I'm going to have I'm like I told you earlier, I'm a month from today I'll be going to the printer and
Okay.
getting mine done, and I'll have all the copies, you know, before I even launch the Kickstarter, I'm gonna have copies on my on hand. So
Awesome.
Just to I don't want no issues of like production issues
no
or anything
pun
like,
intended.
you know, right?
Exactly.
No issues. I don't want no issues of having no issues. that's great. So I want to make sure I have everything, you know, in here, especially being my first Kickstarter launch and everything like that. I don't want anybody to think, you know, oh, well, you just couldn't fulfill. Like, no, it's here, right here. You know, here it is. It's in my hands. Box on the floor here full of them. You know, as soon as the day ends, the shipping starts. So that's going to be super exciting.
Awesome.
And I'm already writing the second one. I have a notebook over here. I'm working on the script for the second issue, which is they're all one shots. I'm not doing like a series.
Mm-hmm.
So mine are one shot issues. But I'm going back. The second issue is going to be, or the second one's going to be the origin story. So that'll be cool.
All right. On. That's good.
But you wrote all three scripts at once?
Yes.
Like all like one long story and broke it up, or did you purposely break it up into three? Or
well, I purposely wanted two issues, but okay. Because of how it was weighted, it felt too sardined with detail. So I actually broke it down into three separate issues, which wasn't my initial intent, but I'm happy with how this is working out. So
no, that's yeah. been, I've heard that a lot, and I might have to work on that for myself, like writing wise, especially with the publishers, and we'll go on that in a second, but
mm-hmm.
you know, the publishers seem to really love like the one shots or, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 issue runs instead of, you know, nobody go to a, you know, everybody's like, don't go to a publisher with like, you know, some 100 issue anthology because they're going to laugh at you and say no. But
you need to establish yourself first,
right?
Yes,
exactly. So what got you to the publisher?
Again, just social media. So one thing I do on the side is I review comic books. On Facebook I have almost 50 reviews now. And
awesome.
The very first book I reviewed was the flagship title of Philbo Publishing, which is Tragedy. I reviewed the first 5 issues, which was the first story arc. I really enjoyed it. One of the things I love about Tragedy, the very first issue, the main character, Grace, she is an Irish assassin. And this is a world that subtly, it doesn't use it a lot, but there are people with meta human-like abilities, but it's downplayed. This is the equivalent of seeing Gandalf do nothing all through Lord of the Rings, and then you see him square up with the Balrog, and you're like, oh, he's actually powerful. You don't get to see that too often. And in this world, it's kind of a similar thing. There are people that could do stuff, but they're used sparingly, and I appreciate that because when it busts out, it's awesome. You're not numb to it. And in the very first issue, by the end of it, she gets impaled with a sword and kicked off a building. and it's about her character development in regards to resiliency and her own self-worth. And I really appreciate that. Like, here's my main character. I'm going to just have the snot beat out of her and we'll have a little bit of a revenge mission. Great. I'm in. I reviewed that book for Phil Russert. And then I showed him my first issue, which I almost had finished at that point, and he made the offer to publish it. So I was very beside myself. One thing, self-hype, self-compliments, that's all cheap stuff, right? Somebody I work with, he says, hardworking guy coming through. If you don't believe me, ask me, I'll tell you. Like it's cheap, but for other people to say, you know what, you're worthy of my brand on it. Or, you know what, I really appreciated this part of your book. Or, you know what, they'll share an image reveal of a cover. They think it's worthy of other people seeing, like it's very flattering, you know?
That is 100%. Any kind of, you know, I'm just in the very infant stages of starting to share my book because we just finished it. I'm putting the final touches, you know, typo, you know, fixing mm-hmm. typos, doing the layout, getting, you know, just everything just laid, you know, perfectly yes. in place to get the PDF, you know, at least the PDF ready, right?
Yeah.
And I started sending it to a couple people to, you know, just get feedback on punctuation and all that stuff. And, but getting all the, you know, the feedback has been amazing, you know, so, and I love it because it's, you know, I would say most of it is the artwork, right? Like that mm-hmm. gets most praise, which is fine. I don't need that, you know, that's great. But I love getting the feedback and then being able to share that with my artist, right? Like, hey, dude, check out what this guy said or this person, you know, they might be my friend and I might be paying him to say that, but don't worry about that part, you know?
Yes.
So we'll see how the rest of the world takes it. I'll send you a copy when I finish the PDF.
Right on, man.
So he offered to publish and then you guys decided, how long ago was this?
Well, I've done one issue a year. So this is 2026. Okay. Issue two is 2025. Issue four Perfect. Would have been 2024.
And then, so you'll get issue three done. You're going to launch Kickstarter and then you're going to go, you said, into stores after that?
We're going to put it together as a volume, a trade paperback.
Okay, perfect.
I don't know if I want to call it a graphic novel because the combined amount of pages is just shy of 70. So I'm going to call it a okay. trade paperback and, sure. Or a volume maybe. And, we'll see from there. My plan was just to, I needed to get this story out of my system. So now that I've almost done that, I've kind of got some uncharted territory to survey the land with and see what I'm going to do. I have no idea.
My store just got the store, my local store, just got a Philbo account last week.
Oh,
I finally
wow.
talked him into it.
Wow.
So, because do you know the Homebrew Comics guys?
Is that Chris Saloff?
Yeah.
Yes.
Chris and Dan Price and
yes.
All them. Those guys have been amazing. So funny story. Chris was the very first interview I ever did back in like May.
So you're talking about Crit.
You're talking about Crit.
Yes.
Yep. And it was very cool. It wasn't even on my radar to do it creator interviews like this. You know, it was just my daughter and I doing a fun little something together, little father-daughter comic talk, you know, just cutting up fun games. We still do that, but we do, you know, two different episodes a week. You know, I do a creator episode and then we do our weekly show. But yeah, so I interviewed Chris and fell in love with it and I thought it turned out really well. I was so nervous. And Chris said it went really well. Like he gave me, you know, like at the end of it, I was like, all right, dude, like this is my first interview. You knew this going in, but like, how'd it go? He's like, oh, dude, this was great. I'm like, okay, cool. So he gave me a lot of confidence. So of course I support all those guys and I got to meet them here. A couple of them live close to me. Within a few hours, but they were all in Raleigh, North Carolina, at a convention a couple months ago. So I got to meet them all in person. So that was really cool. And we're actually tabling next to each other in Connecticut
Very
in August.
Cool.
So that'll be really cool.
Right on, man.
But, you know, they're distributed through Philbo. So I finally, yes. they didn't like, I pulled their books on my pull list. And they didn't show up in my store. And I'm like, and I finally last week talked him into getting a Philbo account because I'd pulled something else and it was like the Val Helsing book last week and it didn't show up. And I'm like, dude, will you just get the account already so I don't have to hunt these down?
Well, so, you will have the option of buying the Madcaps at your LCS.
Awesome.
Most likely 2027, but I can't guarantee that. That's yeah, I got to speak sure. to my distributor about that, of course, but
yeah, he'll get it done. He'll take
I think
care
so.
Of you. You're gonna launch in April, which mm-hmm. is gonna be exciting. And then do you have any big plans for the Kickstarter? Like how your first two went? What'd you do that worked? What'd you do that didn't work? Like give people like me advice.
Okay. Well, I have character sheets of all four main characters based off of level 5 characters level 5 characters in 5th edition D&D. I had to do some reworking to make it specifically D&D, but yeah, the character sheets are complementary to that system. There's a map of the area where this all takes place. There is a tier where you can play D&D with a professional. Now, you have kids. Have you ever heard of Talking Tom? This is going back the better part of a decade or so. Talking Tom and Friends?
Maybe.
Well, the guy who voices Talking Tom, he is the dungeon master. Michael Towson is his name. And if you buy in to this, if you buy into one tier that we're going to have, we've done it for the last two tiers. You get to play alongside of potentially me if there's enough room. If I fill the whole thing up, I won't be playing so other people can. If there's room for me, I'll play. But Michael Towson will be the dungeon master. And that tier is done at cost, which means I don't make any money off it. The proceeds go to paying the dungeon master for his services.
Right.
So
that's very cool.
That one's a lot of fun. I've got, I want to talk about so much, but I can't. Oh, it's driving me nuts.
So when can you talk about it? And will you come back on and talk about it?
You know what? Well, it's live. I'll happily come back. Okay. On. Definitely. I'm in.
Well, yeah. So I've actually been talking with, you know, Jeff Haas, right?
Jeff. Do you know Jeff Haas? Say the last name again.
Haas, H-A-S-S.
Jeff Haas. Let me look.
He's a marketing he's the one that actually got me into doing the interviews. Like, he sent Chris to me. I've been talking to him today, but he markets other people's Kickstarters and stuff.
Yeah.
But he has his own that he just launched, and I'm going to have him probably either tomorrow or next week.
Raining Devil?
What is it?
Is that the name of his book?
Let me look.
Malik Raining Devil?
Yeah. I think that's it. I had him on a show, like a full episode like this, but one of the cool things that I have the opportunity of doing, because, you know, I can do whatever I want with this. But I've done it a couple times where I just invite people that have already been on to our Thursday episode. So on Thursdays, my daughter and I record our episode. But I'll invite people to come back on that episode. And then we just, you know, give a few minutes to talk whatever we want. But then you get to play the games with us too. So I'll definitely do that as well.
Cool.
Yeah. Have you on
a lot of fun.
One of those episodes. That'd be fun.
Yeah, for sure.
I lost my train of thought, but that's okay. But Jeff, he was the one that helped get me started with he sent me an email out of the blue one day. He's like, "Hey, do you want to do interviews?" Like, I've never done one, but sure. And he's like, "I got this guy, Chris Saloff. He needs to, you know, promote a book." I'm like, "Sure." And yeah, so I have these episodes all thanks to Jeff.
Yeah, one of the things I like about Chris is what you see is what you get when you talk to him. You can tell that it's when he tells you something, he means it, I guess is the best way to put it. So it's really good. That was the person to get your feet wet with. That was good.
Yeah, I didn't want to be BS'd, right? Like, yeah, if it was horrible, tell me and I'll fix it, right? My day job can be like that. They won't tell you for, you know, years, and all of a sudden somebody will be like, "Why are you doing this?" And we're like, "What? What are you talking about? We've been doing this for 5 years." Well, that's not the way it's supposed to be. Well, nobody told us.
Noted. Finally.
Yeah. Noted. Okay. Check. Guys, we can't do that anymore. Okay. Wish I would have known that 5 years ago. Do you have corporate Canada, like we say corporate America?
Not to that caliber. I like making jokes, but I try to avoid politics. So to continue 100%. On that trend, you've seen the movie The Rock?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay. So you know the line where Sean Connery talks about the prom queen?
It's been a while.
Winners get the prom queen.
Yeah, you know, yeah, that line? Yeah.
That's the States compared to Canada. That's the best way to put it. I heard a comedian from Estonia say Canada and the States are like two kids from a divorce, and Canada stayed with the mom, hugged a little too much. And
the Estonian assassin?
Him. That's right.
Ari Matter, yes. Mattering or whatever?
Matty? Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, Ari Matty? Ari, yes. Matt, yeah.
How many?
You watch Kill Tony, huh?
I have heard of him.
Kill Tony's fantastic. I watch a lot of Kill Tony, but Ari's amazing. And Joe Rogan and all those guys. I've been watching the Tires series on Netflix with Shane Gillis. It's hilarious.
You know what? When you first said that, the Tires series, I was thinking of the movie Rubber that was on Netflix. I don't know if it's still on there.
I don't know.
It's a movie that is literally about a tire that becomes sentient and can blow things up by focusing on them. It'll just start shaking and the thing it's focused at explodes. It is the... If you like weird movies, this one's up there.
Yep, write it down.
2011, I think it was called. 2011. Here, hold on, Rubber.
I'll find it.
2010.
I will watch it. 2010.
Yeah, it just wakes up in a junkyard and starts rolling around and blowing things up with its will.
That's fantastic. I love cheesy movies. I don't get to watch a lot, so, you know, when I do, it's usually something cheesy.
It's great. It's a good
time. I'll watch Kill Tony usually every other episode, and then I'll watch when I'm eating dinner and breakfast, I'll try to watch a show while I'm eating, but that's about it.
Yeah, I'd say Rubber is a good one. It's right up there with, like, say, you know how Kung Fu Hustle came out at the same time as Kung Pao? Kung Fu Hustle was like, although his comedy was considered more gritty, Rubber is like the next level of that.
Gotcha. I love that. I will definitely check that out. What inspiration would you give for inspiring creators like myself? No, I'm already a creator. I'm not aspiring anymore.
When you write a script, get the first draft done completely before you show it to anybody else. And I have given this advice before on other streams, but if you had to put new shingles on your roof and you tell 40 people, suddenly you're talking to 40 roofing experts. Don't use those shingles. Use these. Do it at this time of the day. And all these conflicting opinions. If you finish a story, first draft, and show it to somebody, they see where you're going and they try to help you get there and try to add to what you have. But if you haven't shown the end destination, you'll have all these really good ideas, but they keep steering you off course because they don't understand where you're going yet. The smartest play you can do is finish the draft first, so all the opinions are in your favor that way.
Very interesting. I'm trying to think. So I wrote my script. Yeah, but I wrote it completely before I asked, so that was good. That's why it went well.
Yeah, well, it's all these good intentions, because you know what, if you added this, or if you're putting this in the end wherever you're going with, make sure to, and it kind of, it's no different than having a sprinter and a marathon runner and tying them at the hip, combining them and telling them to perform their best at the same time. They're going to drag each other down. And
right.
Sometimes a lot of opinions, if they don't know where you're going, it's the same thing. They're trying to give you their best, but it's not your best, you know?
Trying to think how I can tie that feedback to my graphic design issues I'm having. I'm trying to design banners for, like, I'm trying to build a booth, right? Mm-hmm. You know, podcast booth, book booth, right? You know, and I just redid, I'm on like my third variation of my little rack card that I hand out when I go to places. And I'm like, all right, I've got to sit down. I've got to finish these banners and order these banners because my first show is March 21st. So I'm 5 weeks away from my first show and I haven't ordered the banners yet or the tablecloth or anything else. And I sent it to a couple people and I'm like, what do you think, this or this? And they're like, the bad part is he's not a comic guy, right? So I don't know if that's good or bad. So he's like, I have no idea, because I put a bunch of the people that I've had on the episode, like, on the banner. And he's like, I don't know who these people are. I'm like, well, they're okay. Comic creators. Like, I don't really care if you know who they are. I just need to know, is the design okay? He's like, I'm confused.
Make them look pretty, man.
So I redid it and did it a different way and put information like their name and the episode number and different things. He's like, nah, too much dead space. I'm like, come on. Graphic design, there's like so many opinions. There's no right answer and there's no wrong answer in graphic design. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's just a matter of opinion. What I might think look good, you might like not think looks good. And I don't know how to find the common ground in that, but I'm trying. But that's a great point, because I wrote the full script and I handed it to my daughter and I handed it to my wife and I said, here, read this. And then I ran and hid. And then, you know, a little while later, they came back and they're like, hey, this is cool. I'm like, really? And they're like, yeah, it's good. And I'm like, really? And they were like, yeah. And then I let them read the full comic last night and they're like, wow, this is really good. And I'm like,
You just sparked my memory. This is something else I tell the people. Ask for what's the worst, what's room for improvement. There's a couple of reasons for that. One of the big ones, you made the joke, I went and hid. If you give that permission up front, they know you want the help from them. And it's help, it's not attack. So suddenly you don't feel like hiding so much. Like, I find that's very helpful to say, hey, I'm looking, where can this be improved? You'll get the, yeah, I like it thing, of course, but you'll also get the, you know, I think this would be better like this, or maybe this is a little weak, but overall I'm enjoying it, that kind of thing.
That's what I like, giving it to this, my other friend who's not, he does no comic stuff at all. He gives me that, like, I have no idea what you're saying on this page. Like, it makes no sense to me. You know, and I'm like, okay, so now I can actually look at that and be like, is that just because he don't know comics, or is it because it's like, it just doesn't make sense, right? So it, you know, gives you that perspective, which I did enjoy. That's the advice. I like that. Look for what's the, you know, what needs improved. You don't need the worst thing in the world.
No, critique is far more valuable than a compliment, because a critique will allow you to grow.
Correct.
You don't want to be the 5-year-old that's told they're awesome all the time, because there's nothing more ugly than an older infant, right? You don't want to be the old infant. You want to be the person that takes those lumps and grows from it, and that's a good thing. It's never nice to embrace the uncomfortable. When you do it, that's when the good stuff happens later. It's the eating your vegetables so you're stronger later. I don't want to eat my vegetables. Fine, I'll just eat them. That's pretty much that.
A line I've been using a lot lately, it's a Dave Ramsey quote. I don't know if you know who Dave Ramsey is.
Dave Ramsey, that guy?
God, I don't.
Oh,
he's the
God.
Financial guy.
No, I'm thinking, who am I thinking? I'm thinking of Chef Ramsey. Never mind.
Oh, not Gordon Ramsay.
No.
Dave not Ramsey. That guy.
I don't think I know a Dave Ramsey.
Dave Ramsey's he's a financial leadership person, money stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I listen to a lot of his stuff, and he's like, one of the things he says is, to be unclear is to be unkind.
Right? That's a good point.
And
I like that.
I've been using that a lot at work lately. Because without clear direction or clear vision or clear, you know, whatever, you're hurting that person. Clear feedback, right? We're talking about feedback a little while ago.
Mm-hmm.
Without clear feedback, that person can't improve, right?
Yeah.
So, like you just said, being told, oh, it's great, you know, great job, good job, go, you know, you wrote a comic, good job, you know, giving that real feedback makes you better, you know? So.
Yeah, I like to compare it to, there's Mr. Rogers, who has a very nice and meek demeanor. Hi, it's good. I like what you've done. Sometimes you need to be smacked on the back of your head from Johnny Lawrence. Sometimes you need that. Depending on the person, you need the, hey, you got to buck up here. Oh, I do? Okay. Well, I'm glad you told me. You know what? This is a bit of a tangent, but one of the things I really liked about Cobra Kai, not a perfect show, but definitely enjoyable. Its strengths definitely outweighed its weaknesses. I really love the contrast throughout all the seasons of how Robbie, Johnny Lawrence's son, needed to scale his life down and relax. So LaRusso was the ideal sensei for him. But on the flip side, and this is something boys aren't given permission to do this too much, but the first time you meet Miguel Diaz, he's a pushover. He's a doormat. And one thing that Johnny Lawrence did for him, it's not that he said it's okay to be a jerk. What Johnny Lawrence taught him was, this is when it's okay not to be, and there's nothing wrong with that. And that made him the progress in life. That was kind of an internalized philosophy. Not in those words. Those are my own words, of course.
Right.
But when you tell somebody I need that critique, you're giving them permission. I need you to be Johnny Lawrence right now. I need you to toughen me up.
There you go. I need my Johnny Lawrence moment. Let me put that on a t-shirt. Give me the Johnny Lawrence moment. Feedback.
And there was a time it was wrong. Like Johnny, you got to have that balance. That was another common theme in that show. But Johnny Lawrence, he overdid it with that kid. And that's why he was a jerk by the end of that first season. He obviously realized, oh, this is what I fell victim to. And he realized. And by the end of season five, they figure their lives out.
Yeah. I haven't finished the last season, but the first few seasons were amazing.
Season five, I didn't like season three or four too much. Season five is almost as good as the first. Some of the endings in some of the story arcs are abrupt, but the way it plays out, it's very justified. I don't feel it was cheated or rushed or anything.
Okay.
When you watch those last three, four episodes, you'll just like, wow, I feel like it went full circle from 1984 to
wow.
Yeah. It's good.
That is awesome. Cool. Well, I have a couple fun questions, but before that, is there anything that we didn't talk about or cover yet that you need to or want to cover? It's my favorite question.
One thing I've noticed a trend as of late with the indie community is, there was never a lot of drama from what I've seen, but it seems to be down more so than ever since I've been involved. And that's always nice. Time's too short. We should be getting along regardless, or the very least, just avoiding the people you don't like. Right.
Exactly.
But in regards to my book, if you have friends that you miss and you don't get to see as much, you'll be able to relate to this book in one form or another. It's simply that homage told through the theme of fantasy and portrayed through the medium of a comic book. That's all it is. If you like any of those three things, I guarantee you, you're at least going to give it a 50% approval. But I say that confidently. I'm quite sure, and I could say with conviction, that number is going to be a lot higher. If you like magic, melee, mayhem, if you like all sorts of different pieces of mischief, especially in issue two, but by the end of it, these guys are throwing down like Greeks holding dishes. There's a lot of opa going down in this last issue. It all has a big payoff. By the time you finish it, from book one, the first issue, that first page, the sun's just starting to set. By book three, the last couple of pages, the sun is just going up. It'll feel like a full story, and no disrespect to any of the bigger publishers like Marvel or DC, but you don't need to know 60 years worth of lore to appreciate this story. That's no insult to those companies. All the power to them for what they've done. You can go into this with a completely empty mind, zero expectations, and when it's done, yeah, okay. I can tell this guy made something, regardless of whether it's the best or the worst book in the industry. You can walk away saying, you know what, that book is worthy of the industry, and I'm glad I read it. So if you look me up on the Kickstarter, you look up the Madcaps issues 1 to 3, this April, it's going to be going live. If you click on the follow, the notification, you will be helping me out huge because it sways the algorithm in my favor and showing up on more people's radar. And of course, you'll get notified when it launches. But between now and then, on social media, Instagram, you can find me at Raymond, the DM. DM Ray was taken. DM is short for just Dungeon Master. I love tabletop RPG playing. You can find me on Facebook as DM Ray. You could find the Madcap's Facebook page as well. But between now and then, I'll be revealing a lot of cool stuff. I've got a lot of covers coming out, and I guarantee you this is going to be a good time. So check those things out. And I think that's all I have to say.
Awesome. That will be... What was the other username? What was the first username you said?
Raymond the DM.
Raymond the DM. Okay. Just making sure I wrote that down. I'll have all that in the descriptions and all that when this releases too below.
Beautiful. Thanks.
Yeah, check the Kickstarter page out. I have it pulled up over here on my other screen. And I have the save button. So you're at 103.
103. Beautiful. Thanks, man.
That is awesome.
Right on. That's great.
I was already clicked. Never mind. 102. I take that back. I clicked 102. And it went away.
There we go. That's okay.
It went down to 101. I was like, no. Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do. Get people to click my button too. I think I'm at like 7. Which is fine.
Send me the link.
I will do that. Right after this, where after we're done, I'll send it to you.
We don't just talk about comics. We made one.
And it's called the Chronicles of Pam and Pete.
At Talking Comics, we interview creators, show off our comic calls,
play fun games, and show what we're learning firsthand.
Get a free preview of the Chronicles of Panel Pete by subscribing to our Substack.
Watch the trailer and all the video episodes on YouTube.
Or listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Follow along, like, subscribe.
All right, now for the fun questions. These are questions I ask everybody. Do you remember your first favorite superhero or comic character you like?
Well,
gave an awesome intro about that earlier. But,
well,
you know.
when it comes to cartoons, Brave Star was up there. If it came to more classic, different types of superheroes, I used to watch a lot of reruns of 1960s Adam West Batman. Also 1960s animated Spider-Man. So those had a huge influence. But the one that really had big impact on me was when, I'm going to mess up his name, John Wesley Shipp played Barry Allen in The Flash in the 1990s TV series. I love that so much. I had a homemade costume as him in Halloween, and I'm going to go with The Flash.
It's interesting. I meet a lot of Flash fans. Like, I like The Flash, but I mean, it wasn't like my favorite, right? But it's just, I meet a lot of people that are huge Flash fans. It's pretty cool. Do you remember the first comic book you ever read?
I can visually describe it. I couldn't tell you what issue it was because it was my brother's, and I probably still had a pacifier in my mouth and wearing a diaper as I walked around looking at the stuff. It was an Incredible Hulk issue. My brother loved the Hulk, and it had Hulk wrestling with these beasts. They were like brown fur, and it was in some type of gladiator setting. I bet you now with the, I'm not a big fan of AI, but this would be one where if I described that, I bet you I could find that issue with just that description.
AI has its uses, not in the comic industry.
Yeah,
but it has its
I
uses.
Concur. Not with storytelling.
Correct. Not with storytelling, not with, you know,
in
artwork,
any form of storytelling.
Stuff
I think
like
that's
that.
Just not
but
a cool.
I agree. It's weird to me because my day job is in golf, and the amount of AI generated like content in the golf industry is insane.
Yeah.
And so when I flip over from like my comic social and I go over to my golf social, and I'm like, oh my God, like it's so bad over there. It's so bad.
Yeah, it's weird, man.
But that's cool. It's a Hulk issue. I am appreciating the Hulk a lot more. So I'm going down like this trip down memory lane, I guess you'd say, or history. So I'm reading like these books. These are the original Thor books. Behind me.
Yeah, yeah.
So I started with Journey into Mystery 83, and I'm just reading the whole Mighty Thor run. and I'm on like 133, 4, somewhere around there. So I read one a night, and I'm buying all like the trades and stuff to read them. But it's really cool seeing like the Hulk makes an appearance. You know, there's this whole issue based on, you know, Thor's being asked, like, who's stronger, you or Hulk? And he's like, well, we fought one time, but it was a draw. And, you know, it's like they would never admit, like, who actually won. But I can't wait to get, you know, every day I'm reading or something. It's just like I'm getting just so much cool. Like last night, Galactus shows up on the issue I read last night for like just one page, just one little page. Like it was a full page spread, but still like getting to see like the first appearance of Galactus in the Thor run was really cool.
You know what?
I can't wait for him to come back.
What years were that?
So it started in 60. Oh God.
But with
where
Galactus, show me the drawing of Galactus, because I think I actually have that comic of Thor.
That one? All right, hold on. I gotta go. Well, actually, it's in here.
Like you say, Galactus shows up at the very end.
No, the very beginning of an issue.
Oh,
so this is issue. Oh, that's the 118. We're way past that. I'll find it here. This is a black and white version, but it is what it is.
I think I found the Hulk issue I was telling you about.
Cool.
The years that came out was 1984, 1985, which is around the time I was born. So that makes sense. My brother would have it. He gets dumped into the crossroads of eternity. Yeah, this sounds right. 301 to 306. I'm going to Google image search these.
All right. So it was Thor 134. He had just got back from the Black Galaxy where he met Egos. And defeated Egos, or Ego.
Yes.
He comes back to Regal, and just as he's leaving Regal, Galactus shows up. So there's the panel.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, wow.
So Galactus, I have the color version, it's over there. But
very cool.
Galactus shows up because he learned about Ego, and he's going to take care of Ego himself because he wants to, you know, eat all living things.
Delicious.
But I mean, you gotta think, let's see, so it's 134, that had to been like 69,
yeah,
somewhere,
yeah,
around there, 68. I'm not sure what year the Fantastic Four, like 48 was the first appearance of Galactus, was in 66.
Mm-hmm.
So somewhere around there. But Galactus does come back because I have the volume 3. Because I have the volume 3 omnibus, and Galactus is on the cover.
Yeah, that's nice. Sorry, I got sidetracked here. I'm just looking up. I think this is it. I'm pretty sure that I found this era. I'm going to look this up later.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm excited, man.
I've really enjoyed reading it because like, it's from, you know, started in the 60s. So there's just everything that's going on in the world in the 60s is making, you know, of course, its way into the comics and just the way it's written, and I'm learning a lot about writing. Trying to write my second script. It's going to be a lot better, I think. But, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, one thing I really liked when I was a kid is getting my hands on, like, reprints. And one time I got a miniaturized novel of Amazing Spider-Man 89, 90, and 91. Which is where Spidey takes on Doc Ock, and that's the lead up to the death of George Stacy, Captain Stacy, with the bricks falling on him. And just like you mentioned there, reading books of certain time, it's interesting to see how the culture bleeds in. And one thing I appreciate of older culture, again, I try to avoid politics.
Me too.
You can see them in the comics, but it is not the identity. It might,
no, not
something
at all.
Might be mentioned in passing, but it's not the focal point. But the culture, certain things that I think one of the original issues of Spider-Man where he breaks into J. Jonah's office, Spider-Man, he says, well, it's not Fats Domino. And I mean, people nowadays wouldn't know who that is. My old man, that's his music, right? But
right.
Peter Parker wouldn't be saying that now.
Not today. Nope. It is. I love those little references, though. And just Stan's writing. I've never read that much of his writing until recently. And it's just, he was so good. And he called himself out on it, too. Like, just, oh, the marvelous Stan and, yeah. You know, this and that. Like, just, I don't know. It's really good. All right. Next question is, if you could live in any comic book universe, which one would you live in?
Gee, I wouldn't. I wouldn't. Reality is more secure. I love, for example, Invincible. Invincible is a great story. I didn't get involved in it until the cartoon came out. And
same.
I imagine living in a city where one neighboring city over, there's two Viltrumites beating the snot out of each other. Are we going to live? Like, that would be a stressful era. Like, somebody made the joke about, oh no, I read it in an article. If the X-Files universe was real, you would die from pretty much everything, from opening and eating a slice of bread to looking at water the wrong way. You know, all right? The different creatures and everything else. I wouldn't want to live in any comic universe because, I mean, there'd be really cool stuff going on, but going back to the age-old statement of power versus responsibility, you know, there's some cool stuff, but you got to owe up to it as well, and I don't think it would be worth it.
I agree. I like that. One of the best answers I got from that was, I want to live in Peanuts. Like, just
okay, maybe Peanuts.
give me or Garfield. Stephanie Phillips said Garfield. She's like,
all
I
of the adults sound like a muffled
lasagna.
Trumpet.
Right. That is a reality I want to live in.
Yeah, that's my daughter.
I could see that. All right, if you could have any superpower, which would you choose?
Most likely, Master of Magnetism. Our planet is predominantly iron. I mean, every human being has iron in them. If there's a leak, I can plug it. I would buy a bunch of I wouldn't even need to file down the stuff. I could pull it apart at its molecular level. It'd just be no different than splashing water into drops, and it could be whatever shape I want. A very underrated, but excessively powerful.
Yeah. Magneto was one of the scariest villains. Like, just, it's crazy what he can do with metal.
Yeah.
All right. Which comic book character would you want as your personal sidekick?
Personal sidekick.
It doesn't have to be a sidekick already. It could be any character.
Since this has technically been in a comic book, I'll use it. Samwise Gamgee.
Samwise, huh? Okay.
Yeah. That is the person that snaps you back into reality.
Right.
And if he can talk a little wee hobbit to walking up to a volcano and getting the job done with a ring, what better pep talker do you need in your corner?
Exactly. He was so good. So good in that movie.
I saw a meme that if you don't know anybody that is like Samwise Gamgee in your life, that's probably your calling, that you should be that guy.
There you go. That's really good. Now you got me thinking. It's funny because you mentioned when we first hopped on, you're very extroverted, and I am too. But everybody I know is like, in my life, is introverted. It's like I'm the only extrovert. It's very weird. All my friends are pretty introverted.
I have a theory about this. I think what it is introverts stand out a lot to people like you and me. So when you think of people right away, you think of people that are unique from you. Usually,
right?
I don't feel people really think, that person's just like me. I think about them all the time, but you think about them passively. But if you had to name a person, it's probably something that stands out in some type of conundrumous way. And I have a theory about that. It's almost like, just hang out. You'll have fun, I swear. And they're just kind of, why are you like this? You know?
Exactly. The older I get, I can definitely see some appeal to being introverted once in a while. I enjoy like the peace and quiet and not leaving the house or whatever. But then it's like, okay, I got to go. I've got to get some social something going on. So I've got this one really good friend. We've been friends for about, I don't know, almost 10 years now. But we met in a weird circumstance. He was actually, when I owned my store, he was sleeping under my desk one day when I came in. It was very weird. But there's a long story behind that, but it wasn't like he didn't break in to sleep in my office, but a friend let him in and let him stay there because he needed a place to stay one night. And I walk into my office and there's this dude sleeping under my desk. And he's like, they introduced me and I'm like, I didn't care who the hell this person was. He was just there for a day and then leaving. And then like a week later, he showed back up and we became like best friends ever since. It's the weirdest thing ever. But he ended up not moving at that time. And now we're really close friends, but now he did move away from me, bastard. But anyway. But he's my, I don't know what you'd call, like, he keeps me straight. Like, he keeps me out of trouble, right? Like, he's that person. Like,
I get you.
He's more in tune with, like, the world than I am. Like, I'm in my own little world. Like, I live my world.
He's more
in tune with the real world.
What is it? It's sensory versus not instinct. What is it? Intuition. He's better intuition, it sounds like, of his surroundings. Yeah.
So he just keeps me out of trouble. And like, if I'm doing something stupid on the podcast, he's like, hey, dude, don't do that. I'm like, okay, cool. I won't do that. You know?
Yeah.
Or he's like, you should do this. I'm like, okay, I'll do that. You know, he keeps me real, I guess you'd say. Or if there's any controversy, I just send it to him. Like, what do I do? And nine times I just leave it alone or don't do anything. You know? Because I try, like I said, I try really, especially with my daughter being on the show. She's 11.
Mm-hmm.
I stay out of the politics.
Yeah.
I try to stay out of that, the drama, you know, the social drama. You know, I don't need all that in my life. I don't need to be involved in that. We're doing our show. I'm having fun. And that's all there is. We're living our life. All right. This is the last one. If your life were a comic book, what would the title be? Probably what it already is.
Madcaps.
Yeah.
Oh man. How about Be Your Best Bard? There you go.
Ooh.
Be Your Run Best that Bard. Down. That's what I would call it.
I love that.
You're only one person, so no matter how mighty you are, you'll never be as mighty as a handful of people.
That's right.
No, if you can get that handful of people to do something awesome, you know, you've done your part. You've done a lot more than anything you could have done solo. Be your best bard.
Be your best bard. I love it. Well, awesome, man. This has been a lot of fun. I enjoy talking to you. I love all the D&D references. DM Ray. Raymond the DM. On which one is that? Social is that?
That one's Instagram.
Instagram?
That's Raymond the DM.
Okay. And then DM Ray, you're on TikTok, right? Or
that one's on Facebook.
Facebook. Okay. That's right. I'm on all these socials. I can't keep them all straight. Switching back and forth all day, posting all these videos and this one to this one. It's like losing track, but that's okay. We'll get there. But no, man, this has been awesome. Go back to the Kickstarter. Big start. It's the second time I've said that. I said that on the last episode too. And then we made up this whole story on what is Kickstarter. And then it was really funny, actually. But
crowdfunding for lighters.
Yes, exactly. It might be because I'm looking at a Bic lighter on my desk. That might be why I said it. A Bucky's Bic lighter at that.
Bucky Bic lighter.
We have a Bucky's about an hour and a half away.
In Winnipeg, we have the Sal's House, which is diner food, essentially.
I don't mind. I love diner food. In the north, they have great diner food. Down here,
not so much.
Not so much in the south. It's all barbecue joints. That's your diner food here. You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, when you don't have something close, it's like Skyline Chili in the Midwest. It's like just a fast food place only in like Ohio and Indianapolis area. And I love it, but people that live next to one hate it.
You know what we have here in Winnipeg in the next couple of weeks is called, it's in French, it's pronounced Le Festival de Voyageurs, which is basically celebrating the pioneer era of the fur traders in this area. Winnipeg is almost the complete physical center of Canada. So at one point it was a hub. Everything had to go through that area. So they celebrate the culture of that time in the winter. So there's a lot of old style of different events, Falfing, like various different, like really cool stuff. There's different types of foods, because you're mentioning it's more barbecue joints in the south there. Right. We have this, there's this custom type of pea soup, but there's also this interesting thing called tortiere, which is a meat pie, essentially. But it's usually or mostly done during this time of the year only. It's exclusive.
Interesting.
Yes.
I've not spent a lot of time in Canada. I've only been to the Canadian side of Niagara Falls, mm-hmm. on like the East Coast. And then I've been to Victoria Island on the West Coast.
Nice. That's it. Victoria's so, nice.
Yeah. I've got to spend an evening there on an Alaskan cruise.
You cool. know,
so. My oldest daughter's named Victoria, so I had to buy all the crap that said Victoria, you know, and bring a rack to her.
I wish I named her Vicky officially.
Right, instead of Victoria, because now I'm stuck buying all this stuff. Then my second kid's name is Annika. Good luck finding that anywhere on anything.
Is it Annika with an A?
Yeah, so it's A-N-N-A and then K-A-H.
So it's Hanukkah minus the H.
Pretty much.
So you can find anything on Hanukkah and just put it one line.
No. It was purposefully done. So when I go to these gift shops, you can never find her name. I have to buy all that stuff.
Could do like the old Seinfeld bit. George Costanza, my first kid, I'm going to name Seven, and the person takes it. You're not going to find a Seven in the gift shop.
Exactly. Exactly. So hopefully, you know, she'll... It was funny because we went out on a big road trip and she loves keychains. So I buy her a keychain with every state or monument or whatever we go to. And, but she can never find one with her name. Oh, well,
darn,
darn. And so she finally caught on to that this summer though. We were in all these different gift shops all over the country. You know, we went to like 17 states in, you know, a week. And, she's like, why can we never find my name? I was like, I did that on purpose. And then she would make a joke every time she'd be hunting. She's like, dang it. She's like, but they have an A, just an A. I'm like, yeah, don't count.
Yeah.
Well, cool, man. Well, this is awesome. Go back to Kickstarter. Starts in April. And or do the Notify Me on launch. I say that a lot, but go do it because it does help. And yeah, back the project, and they'll be watch Philbo Publishing and Philbo Distribution for the trade in a year or so.
Yes, sir.
All of that will be in the description below, and reach out to us, and thank you for watching.
Beautiful.
I appreciate you being on.
Thank you very much. This has been a great time. Look forward to doing it again.
Awesome.
A small town tucked inside a quiet comic shop. Something magical is waking up. Billy never felt like he belonged. A new school, a couple of bullies, and no real friends. But everything changes when he finds a forgotten comic in the dollar box. From the pages of a comic comes a tiny shape-shifting hero determined to help Billy find his confidence. He whispers encouragement, he sneaks through the halls, and he shows Billy the hero he can become. Because sometimes all it takes is one unexpected friend to help you rewrite your story. From the dollar bin to the real world, The Chronicles of Panel Pete, an all-ages fantasy one-shot adventure. A story about courage, friendship, and the magic waiting in every comic shop. Created and written by A.J. Ryman. Illustrated and co-written by Mike Algier. Are you ready for issue one?
Trying to start a podcast but feeling stuck? At Aquatio, we help creators make waves with everything you need to bring your voice to life. Hosting, recording, editing, and marketing. Whether you're starting from scratch or just need a little help polishing your sound, we're here to hydropower your creativity. Comment on this video or DM us today and let's dive in.